Another case that you would want to know, which just came out, also had a waiver of reliance on representations, except for the fact that the contract itself made some representations, all right, that people wanted to rely upon the representations that were actually in the contract. So the waiver of reliance said, you waive reliance on representations that are not specified in the contract. So, of course, the case broke down, and people were aware of this. Oh, gosh, waiver of reliance really means waiver of reliance on representations. So they tried to argue that certain contract language included the representations that they were now claiming had been part of the contract. In that particular case, the representation was that a computer system would be implemented quickly and could meet 80% of Lufkin's requirements without enhancements. So that's a pretty specific representation. And the contract had some language about, you know, this is going to be a good computer system and it, you know, it should work for you. But that specific statement that they claimed that they relied upon was not in the contract. And so the court threw out a fraud finding based upon that particular representation. Also, this is another important thing to consider. If you are in the process of change orders and representations are made in connection with a change order, all right, and you're like, they say to you, well, we can fix all of the problems if you only pay us another $500,000 in this change order. Well, if you don't get in the change order, written in the change order, this is going to fix my problem, you are stuck with that waiver of reliance language. So even if somebody made a specific representation to you that said, this is all we need to do to fix this problem to get you up to that 80%, requirement that you were looking for, if it's not in writing in the change order, you're in trouble. Because, of course, the change order included the language that said all the terms of the contract that we previously signed are part of this change order. So really important, if there is something that you want to rely upon, it needs to be written in your contract.
All right, now let's assume that your contract does not include a waiver of reliance clause. Does that mean that you are exposed in all cases to a potential fraudulent inducement claim? Well, not necessarily. Under this recent decision in Mercedes-Benz versus Carduco, the answer depends in part on whether the alleged extrinsic representations, in other words, the representations outside the contract, conflict with the actual written terms of the contract itself. Now, in this case, Carduco claimed that he was defrauded or fraudulently induced to enter into a dealership agreement with Mercedes based on certain representations that, although he was going to be authorized to operate a dealership in Harlingen, he was promised the opportunity to move the dealership to McAllen and also become the exclusive Mercedes dealership there. But the contract itself stated that Carduco didn't have an exclusive right to sell Mercedes vehicles in his area of influence. It said that he didn't have the authority to move his dealership anywhere else without Mercedes' consent. And then it expressly authorized Mercedes to essentially add new dealers to his area of influence. Because of these contractual terms, and irrespective of the lack of a waiver of reliance clause, the Texas Supreme Court rejected Carduco's fraudulent inducement claim, and it did so as a matter of law. And the court reasoned here that the contradictions, these express contradictions between the written contractual terms and these alleged extrinsic representations on which Carduco claimed he relied, raised red flags that made his reliance on the representations unjustifiable as a matter of law. So the takeaway here is that don't despair if there's no waiver of reliance clause in your contract. Under this decision, the Texas Supreme Court indicates that parties still can't claim that there were representations made that directly contravene the express terms of the contract itself.
And this is nothing new, but can lead to some really harsh results. If someone tells you, this is a partial settlement of our claim, and you sign a document that says this is a full settlement of our claim, you're just out of luck, even if they admit they told you it was only a partial settlement of your claim. So very important that you pay attention to what you're signing.
Mm-hmm, definitely. Another recurring issue in some contract disputes is the enforceability of liquidated damages clauses. And this case is notable because it provides a good roadmap for how Texas courts are going to analyze the enforceability question. And the contract here dealt with the purchase of renewable energy credits, or RECs. And it prescribed a penalty or a liquidated damages provision of $50 per REC that wasn't provided as required in the contract. Now, under Texas law, the general standard provides that these liquidated damages clauses are enforceable if, at the time of the contract, the harm was difficult to estimate, and also the amount of damages prescribed by the provision is a reasonable forecast of just compensation. So the Texas Supreme Court applied this test in FPL, and as a threshold matter, it held that it agreed that these damages associated with the failure to provide RECs were difficult to estimate because at the time this contract was executed, there wasn't really a market for RECs and any future market was uncertain. And then as to whether the liquidated damages provision provided a reasonable forecast of just compensation, the court agreed that the mere fact that this $50 figure came from a penalty provision in the Texas Administrative Code didn't invalidate the provision on its face.